Hey, welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News, online all the time at npr.org/Bryant Park. Coming up on the show, a chat about the National Rattlesnake Sacking Championship this weekend in Taylor, Texas. And while we're on the subject, new producers at the BPP have a choice. We can break them in one of two ways. One, we lock them in a plexiglass enclosure with 10 live rattlesnakes, and they can't come out till they get them all in a sack, or they're dead. Or they can come in here and talk about the most emailed, most popular stories on the interwebs. So, new guy Mark Garrison here today. Mark, snakes are the most, your choice.
I've actually been looking for the snakes all morning. They're not indigenous to Bryant Park, so I'm going to have to go with the most. My debut starts with three words. These were, I should add, approved by senior producer Matt Martinez, somewhat emphatically. Nazi orgy scandal.
You just dove right in there, didn't you, buddy?
Yeah.
First day out.
Don't blame
That's
me.
That's the one you pick.
Blame only the users of CBSNews.com because they made it the number one most viewed story.
That's the beauty of this segment, is that we don't have to claim
responsibility. It's not fault, deniability, you know, because it's offensive, disgusting, sex. Formula One racing, this is where it happens. Max Mosley is the president of the FIA, that's the governing body. The famed British tabloid News of the World obtained some video of apparently him with five prostitutes doing costume Nazi role-playing bondage stuff. That's all the details I care to give. Don't read the article. It's painfully vivid unless you want to be tortured by these images for a long time. We had to do it, but in any case, Mosley has apologized and issued what I would call maybe a partial denial. He said there was no Nazi connotation to the matter. I want to give a note, too, while I'm here, to the NPR HR department. If anybody's listening, I borrowed Angela Ellis's computer one of our fellow staffers here. So if you go to her Google toolbar and start typing, you're going to see Nazi orgy. So I just want to say she's not accessing any Nazi safe for work sites.
Right. That was actually Mark that was doing that.
All in the course of journalism. I didn't save anything, Angela, if you're listening.
Could
I think she's traveling.
A brief career here at the BPP.
Yeah.
Well done, Mark. Excellent debut.
Yes, excellent debut.
Trisha McKinney, our editor.
And I have to follow that with a story about tortoises, but I'll do my best.
This you is one of start the, with a Nazi orgy.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
These tortoises were not involved in any orgies. Okay, so this is one of the most viewed stories on Yahoo News. The headline, Mojave Tortoises Moved for Army Training. In the Mojave Desert of California, there's the desert tortoise lives there, but Fort Irwin needs more acres for tank training. So they are bagging up these tortoises who just came out of their winter hibernation. They burrow under the ground. They're coming out. They've previously been tagged with these little radio transmitters, so that's how they find the tortoises. They put them in plastic containers, and they move them to a new home. How do you move a tortoise, you may ask?
How did you know?
Move a tortoise? Yes.
Very gently, according to a spokesman for Fort Irwin. You have to make sure they don't get stressed during the move.
Understood.
So, of course, some wildlife people are concerned about the stress to these tortoises. They're concerned about their new location being too close to a highway. So everybody's going to keep their eye on these tortoises, make sure they stay healthy. But the tanks are moving in.
All right.
Of a done deal.
Thanks, Trisha. Ian.
Hey. I want to give a quick update on a most yesterday. I talked about deer shining, when people shine headlights and freeze deer. And I asked the question, why do they freeze when you shine lights on them? And nobody knew. So I put it up on the blog, had a few interesting theories. One, because they believe that night predators are looking for motion, and they know that, so they stay frozen, and so then the night predators, which use motion to see, can't see them. Mm. That one's wrong.
I liked it though.
So yeah, one guy, Greg, said their eyes are more sensitive, and they're not frozen exactly. They're just blinded, and they don't want to move until they can see. So I called up a deer expert, ecologist Dwayne Diefenbach at Penn State, for the official deer in the headlights answer. Dwayne,
they basically are blinded. And so any perception that deer seem to freeze in the headlights is more the fact that they're blinded and can't see where they need to go.
So, Greg, congratulations. You are the blog deer expert.
Du jour.
Yes. I'm going to move on to my most. This is a most popular on Wired. Okay, this guy got his car stolen, and he freaks out. He goes on this gearhead forum in Canada. He's like, hey, my Nissan GTR got stolen. Can anybody help? So a moderator on the forum actually then sees the car, and the guy who had the car stolen noted that the thief was missing a couple fingers. So the guy sees this car out, and he's like, how do I know if this is the one? So he gives the driver the rock sign.
Oh, like the hook 'em horns.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And the driver gives it back, and he sees that he's missing a finger in his rock sign, so he takes a picture of him.
CSI.
Oh, it's so great. So he puts it up on a forum. Everybody starts calling this kid the Claw. So they like find his Facebook page. Somebody's like, oh, I see this car in my neighborhood, or I saw this car in a neighborhood. I don't know exactly the street name. People used the information he gave, did a Google Maps search, figured out the exact location of this guy's house. So forums, Facebook, and Google Maps were used. The next day, they actually got to the car. One problem, the tires are shot, the alignment is off, the interior reeks of marijuana, and the guy recovered in the car the thief's New York Yankees baseball cap, and he put it up on eBay. It's I just checked, it's at $265 if anybody wants the Claus Yankees cap.
Wow. Good story,
the
Ian.
The internet helps us.
Dan, we need help, apparently.
Yeah,
your story.
We do. We got a most emails from Yahoo News. A new poll says 81% of Americans think the U.S. is on the wrong track. And if 81% sounds like a lot, it is. CBS News, New York Times has been doing this poll since the early 90s, and this is the highest number of Americans they've ever found to say that the country is headed in the wrong direction. 81% last year, it was 69%. In early 2002, it was 35%. Recent economic problems seem to have been the most recent thing that's pushing that number up higher. Majority of Democrats and Republicans, men and women, residents of cities and rural areas, college graduates, and people only finished high school.
Across the board.
Living together.
Everyone's
bummed. Anarchy. Right. And actually, one other interesting tidbit from this poll is that, first of all, President Bush's approval rating hasn't changed since last summer, 28%, according to this poll. But also, the majority of Americans blame the government for the housing crisis, as opposed to lenders or borrowers or investment banks. More people blame the government than any other possible culprit.
Interesting. My most is from the Google Trends, what people are searching. Number 6 early this morning, the name Randy Rhodes. You're familiar with this, Dan. You
Indeed.
Worked at Air America at one point.
Should I abstain from this story?
You can maybe just add. Maybe you have Dish. I didn't even think about that.
What happened to this person?
Randy Rhodes has Afternoon Drive, sort of a very well-known woman, political talk show host. She was doing stand-up comedy at an event, and in the course of the stand-up comedy part, she referred to both Hillary Clinton and Geraldine Ferraro as the word that rhymes with more,
door,
store,
poor,
core. And it wasn't just a one-off. I think she called HRC a more word 4 times.
Four rhymes with that word, too.
And she was involved with a certain gerund, which starts with F.
Oh my
that
gosh.
Kind of more store, if you can imagine.
Allison, classy. I'm so impressed with the way you're getting around this story, by the way.
I know, really.
Just be careful. So she was suspended, and there's some discussion about it because it was actually during off hours. It had a little bit to do with Air America. It's one of the stations in San Francisco was sponsoring an event, and she was sort of hosting it. So she has been suspended, but there's sort of a blog debate about First Amendment rights, et cetera, et cetera. But Randy Rhodes, suspended. And
Mr. Martinez.
Yes, hello. I have two of the most emailed stories on NPR.org right now. The first, I just love. This is actually the number 2 most emailed story. It's the 5 myths about drinking water. And I'll just go through the myths. They're going to blow your mind a little bit because I actually believed some of these until I read this. Drink 8 glasses each day. A myth. That's a total myth. There's no clear health benefit to drinking 8 glasses a day. Nobody knows where that came from, according to the University of Pennsylvania.
The powerful water lobby.
Yeah, Dr. Stanley Goldfarb.
Exactly.
Yeah. Dr. Stanley Goldfarb, with the kidney expert at the University of Pennsylvania, is giving the suggestions here, okay? Or is giving the answers. Myth number 2, drinking lots of water helps clear out toxins. Wrong. Our kidneys do that. Water will not do that.
So we should drink kidneys?
Yes. Lots
8
of
kidneys a day.
Okay.
People.
I'm
okay.
One step ahead of you, buddy.
Lots of water equals healthier skin? No. 60% of our body is water already. Drinking extra water leads to weight loss? No. It does not.
It can help, it said, but it's not.
Well,
it shouldn't be used as
not like. Really. I mean, it's just to keep your mouth busy so you're not eating.
So it doesn't subtract
bacon. So that can help?
Yes.
Right.
Well.
Yeah,
right.
No, it doesn't.
Myth number 5, It's easy to get hydrated. It's easy to get dehydrated during a workout. That is not true.
I agree with that. I never have to drink water when
right.
I run.
If you're obviously a marathon runner, a heavy biker, heavy hiker, yeah, you got to worry about dehydration. But
what if you're like Ian and you only sweat on half of your body?
Yeah, well, then you're just weird.
Love that you worked that into the show. Good job.
The number one most emailed story is by NPR's Chris Arnold. It's about David Swenson. He manages Yale University's endowment. And last year, he made 28% return on the endowment. He added $5 billion to the university's endowment. Here's how he did it.
If you want to make the most money you can for retirement, David Swenson is your friend. He recently took the time to research and write a book to give advice to everyday people. First, he says, in scary economic times like this, you shouldn't trust your instincts.
The human tendency in this kind of environment is to do something, to make a change.
Stocks seem risky, they've been falling, so Swenson says most people he talks to get nervous and want to sell stocks.
And that's exactly the wrong reaction. Buying high and selling low is not a way to make money. It's not hard, right? Very simple. You want to do the opposite.
Swenson says you should have the right long-term mix of stock index funds, bonds, real estate investment trusts, adjusted according to your age. We've got his advice on that at NPR.org. But say when stocks tank, that mix gets out of balance. You used to have, say, 30% of your holdings in U.S. stocks. Now it's 29 or 28%. So you rebalance by shifting more holdings into stock index funds.
Volatility has been so extreme that there have been a couple instances where we've traded pretty significant volumes, tens of millions of dollars.
That's in a single day. If stocks fall, Yale's endowment is buying them. On some days, the market's turned around and come roaring back up to where it started, and then Swenson's sold stocks.
And made in excess of $1 million. So you end up at the same place that you started, except $1 million ahead. That's not bad. But from rebalancing, not from speculating, simply sticking with your long-term targets.
That's the takeaway. The stock market can end up flat, but you've still made money because you rebalanced when it was down. Sure, sometimes the market keeps going down, but over time, 5 years, 10, 20 years, you figure the market will eventually keep rising. And Swenson says you will goose out substantial extra returns by rebalancing along the way.
Free bonus.
Now, back to that mix of what you should own. Here, Swenson says that people are constantly bombarded with the wrong messages.
But powerful dreams need more than just a little weekend gardening.
Start with your dreams and your Ameriprise financial advisor through a unique approach to financial planning.
We called Jim Barnash with Ameriprise Financial. He's the National Director of Financial Planning. He says, especially in volatile markets like this, people need quality one-on-one advice to make sure they're properly diversified. We asked him what the fees are at Ameriprise for that advice.
They're in a range from 40 basis points on up to in excess of 1.25%.
Okay, and I'm just busting out my calculator here. Let's say somebody's, I don't know, in their late 40s, early 50s, they've made some money, they got $500,000 in their retirement 401k, 1.25%. So that right there, that's going to cost them $6,250 a year for the Ameriprise fees. And then on top of that, they'll be paying fees for the different mutual funds that they're in?
It's very possible if you're using mutual funds.
Over 20 years, that person is losing hundreds of thousands of dollars because of fees. Of course, that's better than not investing at all, and a lot of people want an advisor to help them. But Swenson says most of these investment services provide pretty mediocre advice, and it's just not worth giving them a percentage of your life savings.
That's the wrong path. And the reason it's the wrong path is it's a very, very expensive path.
Swenson says fees are also the big reason you should buy index funds instead of classic mutual funds. The index funds, which track market segments like the S&P 500, are a lot cheaper. Swenson says the vast majority of professional mutual fund managers fail to beat those indexes.
I mean, when you look at the results on an after-fee, after-tax basis over reasonably long periods of time, there's almost no chance that you end up beating an index fund.
The odds, he says, are 100 to 1. Swenson's last bit of advice, don't try to pick individual stocks and go with nonprofit funds like Vanguard. There, too, the lower fees will mean more money in your pocket over time.
That's NPR's Chris Arnold. You can find links to this story and all the stories you heard on The Most by clicking over at our website, npr.org/Bryant Park. Thank you.